This is the Tribe and Dish Podcast, talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy.
Part of the Almighty Baller Network.
We haven't even started yet!
The Tribe and Dish Podcast.
We start right now!
You're listening to the Drive a Dish NBA podcast. My name is Justin. I am joined with Tim Tompkins as we continue our little midweek episodes that I guess we're dubbing the name What Comes Next, where we highlight a team that was in the playoffs that sadly is no longer in the playoffs, and we talk about what they can do next. And this time we've brought on Josh Martin. He's an NBA lead writer for Bleacher Report, has contributed to Clippers.com. He is also the co-host of Hollywood Hoops and also on the Almighty Baller Network. So Josh, thank you so much for joining us. We're happy to be talking Clippers because there's definitely a whole lot of questions.
I think we all have tons of questions about the Clippers, but they're definitely, I'm sure that most of them I've pondered, and hopefully any new ones that come up, I'll come up with some novel answers to. We'll see how this goes.
Okay, well, we'll just kind of giving it a recap. The Clippers ending the season this year 51-31, fourth in the Western Conference, 12th in points per game, 15 in rebounds per game, 15th in assists, and third in opponent's points per game, obviously losing to the Jazz in the playoffs, which some people would argue that was kind of coming up short in terms of expectation. Blake Griffin got hurt. Chris Paul looked pretty good. And J.J. Redick seemed to be having some trouble finding his shots. So I guess before we get into what's next, give us a little feeling of what the fans feel about the Clippers right now. Are they high on the team? Are they low on the team? Are they ready to just, you know, move on and blow it up?
You know, the Clippers fans in my life, and I will say that there are a number of diehard Clipper fans in my life, they feel the way they've always felt about the Clippers, that it's never going to get any better for them. They're never going to get over that hump. That's kind of what they've been accustomed to over the course of their entire lives as Clipper fans. Think about the decades and decades that the Clippers were the laughingstock of the league, and they would always bring in these young, exciting prospects, and it seemed like they were going to turn the page, but, you know, Donald Sterling's thriftiness or some sort of inner turmoil or something that went wrong with the players would inevitably submarine the situation. Those young players would get old enough to then become free agents and leave the Clippers. Donald Sterling wouldn't want to pay for that, and so that sort of became the cycle for a long time in L.A. And then, of course, Blake Griffin comes along, DeAndre Jordan, Chris Paul gets traded here, and it changes things to an extent, obviously, where now the Clippers are competitive. They're better than the Lakers. They're in the playoffs every year. But there still is that same sort of a sense of doom and inevitability that they're never going to get over that sort of hump. And I think a lot of Clipper fans have sort of grown tired of seeing the same old thing with this group, of seeing Doc Rivers sort of cycle through those same crusty veterans that he uses to fill out his bench and sort of struggle to do the GM job on top of the coaching job. So I think, look, a lot of them are at a point where they would maybe not want to see it blown up, but see some changes. But what those changes are, we'll wait and see. It's hard to say at this point what this team is going to look like, because really it's not up to the Clippers to decide. It's up to their free agents, and then the team kind of has to proceed from there.
And you bring up a good point, Josh, and we're obviously going to get into the core pieces of it. But I just want to ask you about a couple of some of the role players. Lukemba Mute got a player option for next season. Does he pick that up? It's a little over $2 million.
Oh, no way he picks that up. I mean, in this market, in this day and age, a player of his caliber, you figure, can get at least double that, probably maybe even triple or quadruple that, because you're looking at the mid-level exception next year being around $8 or $9 million. Maybe he's not that, but when you think of the type of player that Lukemba Mute turned into with LA, shooting nearly 40% from three, playing great defense, so he kind of fits, at least on the surface, that mold of a 3-and-D guy that so many teams are clamoring for nowadays. I think he could make a much better take, a much prettier penny by opting out and getting into the free agent market, whether that's coming back to the Clippers for more or seeking more money elsewhere.
In terms of the money, I know Allen Crabb got paid a lot. So every player, you know, definitely feels like they can make a lot of money. And you can correct me if I'm wrong. There's eight players on the Clippers that are that could potentially be free agents this summer.
Well, let's dig into the page on Basketball Insiders here. I believe it's eight or nine, because you're looking at Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, J.J. Redick, Luke Mbamute, and pretty much their entire bench, other than Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford, I think are all free agents as well. Let's be specific. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. There's eight guys, and that doesn't include Paul Pierce, obviously, who's retiring. So there's nine. There's going to be nine guys potentially changing over or signing new contracts with the Clippers next season.
You know, their payroll right now, including their cap holds, I think they're like $150 million for next season or something like that. You look at a player like J.J. Redick, who, you know, he's coming off a team-friendly deal. I think it was around like $12 or $13 million, something like that. You know, is there a chance that he comes back? It's likely to be his last big payday. And, you know, what are your thoughts on whether or not Steve Ballmer's willing to cough it up for J.J. Redick?
You know, it's funny because Donald Sterling obviously had his reservations about J.J. Redick. He almost blew up that whole situation when the Clippers did the sign and trade for him. You know, he actually made about $7.4 million this past year, so it was a very team-friendly deal. Mm-hmm. Figure he's going to be looking for at least double that annually in his next deal. And I don't know if it comes down to is Steve Ballmer going to sign off on that so much as when Doc Rivers looks around at his situation, is that the best way for his team to spend its scarce resources on a guy who is 32, will be 33 by the time the next season comes around, and I think was very much exposed in that series against the Utah Jazz. He's not a particularly big, long, or athletic shooting guard. He can do a little bit more than shoot, but you're not going to ask JJ to create. He can come off a curl and take a couple dribbles and try to finish around the rim, but really you have him there to shoot. But if he's trying to go up against, you know, wings in this day and age who are 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", have some length, obviously he struggled to even get any shots up against that kind of length against Utah, and he struggled defensively to stop guys of that size on the other end. And so if you're the Clippers and you're going into next season thinking, all right, well, where do we have to get better? Doc Rivers said this as much as at his postseason press conference. We need to get longer. We need to get younger. We need more two-way players. And those are all strikes against J.J. Redick, which would lead me to believe that unless J.J. is going to come back at what would be considered a discount compared to the market rate, that he's not going to be back in a Clippers uniform next season.
So you guys know that every year during the offseason, we head out to NBA Summer League. Well, this year, we're trying to head to Vegas to cover the NBA Summer League for you there to bring you a ton of extra content. Unfortunately, plane tickets for three people plus five nights hotel rooms is extremely expensive. We have a GoFundMe set up that we would appreciate your support on. If you get any value out of the Drive Dish podcast, even a couple of dollars, it really does help. All the information is on www.driveanddishpodcast.com right at the top of the page. Help send the Drive and Dish podcast out to NBA Summer League.
You brought up a good point about J.J. Redick, and I know he was kind of rumored in general with the Melo trade that was going down around the trade deadline. And I know for the most part, you were talking about you want to get, you know, longer and younger and stuff like that. So I don't feel like Melo really falls into that category. But do you think the Clippers maybe revisit those rumors and see if they can maybe bring Melo in and create kind of a, I guess, a big four in a sense?
I think they will. I mean, I'm sure the Knicks will be looking around for places, and the Knicks will probably have a tough time finding anything close to equal value for Carmelo. And obviously, he doesn't fit being younger. And I mean, he's got some length. He's a good-sized wing. He's like 6'8", pretty bulky dude. But he's not a great two-way player per se. But he is a veteran. He is a guy who's not typically going to stir up a ton of trouble. He's good friends with Chris Paul, so you figure that will sort of work out from that sort of chemistry standpoint. And really, what the Clippers have needed, I think, for a while, at least on the offensive end, it's funny because you look at the numbers and all the numbers say they're an elite offense and they can score with the best of them and all these different things. And you watch them play, especially in the half court, and so often it's such a labor for them at times just to get a basket, just to generate offense, which is so strange when you talk about the type of offensive talent they had out there typically with Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan leading the league in field goal percentage, J.J. Redick, you know, last year leading the league in three-point percentage, but they didn't really have a great scorer per se, a guy who you could get him the ball, and if things break down and you need to get a bucket, that guy can get it done for you. They didn't have a guy who you could look to as being a real go-to scorer in crunch time. A lot of that ended up falling to Chris Paul, and in a lot of situations, obviously, he can handle that, but it's not necessarily ideal as far as his skill set, and it's not ideal given circumstances, because if you're out there trying to run and have Chris Paul go ISO for a shot at the end of the game, chances are you're going to wind up with a contested mid-range jumper from a guy who's about 6 feet tall. That's not really a very good look. If Chris is getting that in the normal flow of play, then fine, he can pull up for those. But if he's fading away, he's got hands in his face, if everyone knows what's coming, it's no longer quite a great option for them. And Carmelo Anthony is the type of guy who can very much take that kind of shot, make that kind of shot, create that kind of shot if need be, which I think is part of what the Clippers have been lacking in past playoffs, is someone to take that crunch time pressure off of Chris Paul.
Well, Josh, I think I'd be remiss not to at least bring this up then. What are you, maybe, is it possible that Kristaps Porzingis is that guy?
No, that's not happening. That,
what was your take on that whole, you know, that tweet that he sent out and then saying that, you know, his account got hacked and yada, yada, yada?
Yeah, I definitely didn't get hacked. I read some things that sort of put pieces together. It sounded like he meant to DM that probably to a model by the name of Abigail Ratchford, who he's been sort of friendly with on social media. Maybe she was asking him, you know, what, you know, when are you going to be in LA again? Because she's based out here, something along those lines. And he sent that out because shortly thereafter, she also sent out a tweet that said Clippers with a check mark. So maybe there's something there, but there's no way that the Knicks are going to look to trade Kristaps Porzingis. You know, maybe he wants a better situation, but he's a young guy. The Knicks have all the control here, and they wouldn't be trying to get rid of Carmelo Anthony so hard to make things better for Kristaps, and then all of a sudden do that 180 and try to dump Kristaps as well.
Well, you kind of bring up a funny segue when you're talking about control in general is, you know, Doc Rivers running this dual job. Do you think maybe it's time for him to give up his role as a GM and just be a coach?
I don't think it would be the worst thing, but I think there is a little bit of a misperception as far as what it is that Doc Rivers does from day to day and how involved he is as an executive. He delegates the vast majority of those duties to other people, Lawrence Frank in particular. And you can, if there's any debate, is Lawrence Frank, I think, really the one who's the best fit for this job right now, because this was his first year in management. And I think his idea was that he wanted to get out of coaching and serve in more of a management role. So this is sort of new for him. There's a lot of other new people, new staff who were brought into the Clippers front office over the past year who handle a lot of the day-to-day of front office duties. So Doc Rivers isn't out there obviously scouting guys, you know, in college or other guys in the pros or in the D League, whatever. He's consumed with coaching during the season. Just that he also has some say in what goes on from a front office perspective. Think of it like what the Spurs do. It's not like Greg Popovich is out there, you know, doing all the dirty work of a GM. That is done. That's done by R.C. Buford. But Pop obviously does have some decision-making power when it comes to, once all that other legwork is done, what do the Spurs then end up doing? Not saying that Doc Rivers is Greg Popovich in any way, obviously, but I think that's more of the structure that the Clippers have gone for, and it's still a work in progress. You know, obviously not all of the moves that Doc Rivers has made have worked out so well. A lot of it is just him seemingly going back to the well with bringing in guys that he's played that his teams have played against and that have done well against his team. I think the biggest misstep in my mind is when they traded Eric Bledsoe for J.J. Redick and Jared Dudley, because really they didn't need to trade for J.J. They could have signed him outright, but they wanted to give him a little bit of extra money, so they did it through the signing trade. Did not get as much in return as they should have. And then obviously they ended up attaching a first-round pick to Jared Dudley to get rid of him. He went off, had a great season in Milwaukee, and the Clippers were out another pick. So from that perspective, Doc has not been great at that job. I think a lot of Clipper fans would prefer that he not be a GM, and I think there are certainly some that would prefer he not be coach either, but I don't think he's going to be giving up either hat this year anyway. We'll see what happens going forward, but he certainly has his work cut out for him this summer.
Yeah, Eric Bledsoe would have come in really handy on that Clipper squad.
Yeah, you think? I mean, when you think about all the missteps, you know, there's so much talk about, you know, during the playoffs about how Joe Ingles could have been a Clipper, but the Clippers cut him during training camp. And that year they were trying to find another backup point guard after Darren Collison left for Sacramento. They brought in Jordan Farmar. He got hurt during preseason, so they decided to keep on Jared Cunningham as another option at the point. So they had to cut Joe Ingles. And, of course, by midseason, Jared Cunningham was gone. Jordan Farmar was gone. So if they had already had an established backup point guard at that point, then maybe Joe Ingles is a Clipper. Who knows? Alternate realities exist out there in some form or fashion.
I totally agree with that. One of the other red flags that I guess comes up with your whole they want to get younger comment is the Clippers don't really have a pick this year. So how do they are they just going to take the L with that and just not really worry about that? Or are they going to try to find a way to maybe flip some players for maybe even second round picks?
Well, they can buy into the draft. Okay. They'll have some money, and certainly Steve Ballmer is not going to be afraid to spend if the Clippers decide that that's the route they want to take. Now, trusting Doc Rivers to develop young players is has proven to be sort of a tricky proposition, unless that young player also happens to be his son. So we'll see how that works out. But look, the big step the Clippers are taking in that direction is that they're reported to be opening their own D-League franchise this coming year in Ontario, just outside of L.A. They'll be called, according to Mark Stein, the Agua Caliente Clippers of Ontario. So that's a mouthful for the sponsors out there. But that's a huge step for the Clippers from this perspective, because, you know, over the years, they have drafted guys in the first and second round. You've seen guys like Reggie Bullock, C.J. Wilcox, shuffling in and out. This past year, they brought in Bryce Johnson and Diamond Stone. And the big problem is that those guys haven't gotten any time to play much anywhere, in part because, you know, it makes sense. If you're Doc Rivers and you're the Clippers, to a certain extent, it makes sense anyway, that you're trying to contend, you're trying to be a top team. There's not a whole lot of room and time and space for teaching. You bring in veteran players, guys who understand the NBA, guys who know how to win, and you're not trying to sort of take time aside and show these guys the ropes. But the problem was the Clippers didn't have another place they could send them. Doc talked about this too at his postseason press conference, about how he would have to call up, or they would have to call up other D-League franchises, other teams, and sort of bargain to get minutes for Bryce Johnson and Diamond Stone. Like, hey, can you get, you know, 15 minutes for my guy, 20 minutes for my guy? Which is tough when you have zero control and these other organizations are running their D-League franchises their own way. They're trying to get their own guys developed. That didn't give the Clippers many avenues to develop their draft picks, certainly, and it gave them even fewer avenues to get a close look at some other players, maybe guys from overseas, undrafted free agents, other guys floating around the basketball world who might have been helpful. So now that they're going to have a D-League, or what will now be the G-League franchise, I think that will give the Clippers an opportunity to dig up a diamond in the rough. That doesn't mean that it's going to happen overnight. It's probably going to take some time to get that operation up and running. But you figure going forward, you know, with so many guys in the NBA nowadays cycling through the D-League first, I think it was something like 190-plus guys in the NBA this year who played with D-League experience, which was an all-time high. I think there is some potential there for the Clippers to find the type of help they're looking for. Not a star, but maybe a player here, a player there, who can help their bench and fortify them in very specific ways.
Well, and there's times that that comes in very handy. I mean, you made the Greg Popovich comparison earlier, Josh, and, you know, just not to get off of the Clippers, but if you look at the way that the San Antonio Spurs were able to beat the Rockets the other day in overtime, two of the players for the Spurs that were on the court because Kawhi Leonard was off of that ankle injury, you know, they were D-League players. And part of what has made the Spurs bench so valuable is that they have found time to get them minutes and get them acclimated with playing with the rest of the roster throughout the regular season. So there are times in which, you know, I would have to disagree with Pop's logic on that, because I do think that there is value in cultivating those younger players. And then, you know, you look at the Rockets, who they were running like seven deep, and everyone just looks gassed at the end of the game. And that's sort of how the Clippers look to me at times, is gassed because the rotations are smaller. They, you know, their bench is weak.
The Drive and Dish NBA can now be played hands-free. Just say to your Amazon Echo, play podcast, The Drive and Dish NBA, and you can hear all our episodes.
I know we're coming up on towards the end of the interview with you, and we'd be remiss to ask, but does Blake Griffin and Chris Paul's return solely depend on whether the Clippers offer that fifth year in the extension?
I don't think so. I think there are factors beyond that. I think those two guys are going to have to do some serious soul searching and decide, you know, do they feel like they can win here? Do they feel like they can do everything they want to do here? Or is it time to strike out and see what else is out there? And it depends on what their priorities are. Is it just about money? Is it just about, you know, trying to be comfortable in LA still? Or do they want to go out and win? Are there other factors that play in? I think free agency is just a really complicated thing. Now, obviously, if you're Blake or you're Chris, it's hard to turn down that extra money. It's not just the extra year, too. Remember, you're talking for a max contract. It's 8% raises year over year versus 5%. I know that's not the bulk of the money, but that comes out to, you know, a couple million dollars more each year, which is no laughing matter. Certainly, I'm sure you or I would gladly take that extra scratch if they're going to give it up. But for Chris in particular, it's tough to imagine him turning it down, because he did so much legwork as the head of the players union to change the over 36 rule to the over 38 rule, where now he can sign a 5-year max contract, where before he would be more limited in what he could sign. With Blake, because he's probably not going to be an all NBA selection, he won't be eligible for one of those designated veteran contracts. He'll be able to get about 30% of the cap as opposed to 35%. It's a little bit of a different story. The difference is not as great, but still there are a lot of other factors involved for him, because the mother of his children lives here. The mother of children lives here. He's involved in other off-court pursuits here. Not that he couldn't, you know, live here in the off-season and go work somewhere else during the season, but I think there are a lot of things that these guys have to juggle, because at the end of the day, you know, this may seem obvious, but they're not just basketball players, they're mm-hmm. human beings, and these are life decisions. And so there's a lot more that goes into it, as there would be for anyone trying to make this sort of decision.
Well, and that's something that seems to be easily forgotten when we talk about basketball, is there's a human aspect to it as well. And, you know, bringing home that extra money to your family definitely does resonate. But it's kind of funny that you just mentioned that, and then I'm going to bring up this Facebook question that kind of goes the exact opposite way. Mark on Facebook asked, if CP3 decides to go to, say, the Spurs, and Blake ends up taking off as well, what would be the next step for the franchise? Do you think they make sure to get some value from DeAndre Jordan, maybe trade him, although I feel like DeAndre Jordan probably would be a little bit upset since they convinced him to come back. You know, what would the team do if the worst did happen, I guess?
Wow. Doomsday scenario.
Yeah.
I guess you'd have to blow it up at that point, unless you're just trying to run pick and roll with Austin Rivers and DeAndre Jordan all day. They would have At that point, they would have, I believe, enough cap space to go after one max free agent. So maybe you go out into the market, you try to do that. But short of that, if you can't land a max free agent or someone who could be a difference maker, then I think you do have to consider blowing it up. The trouble is that they're still out picks beyond this year. So they're not really in a position, a good position to rebuild. So they'd have to really hope that whatever they get in return for the remaining pieces, whether that's DeAndre, Austin, whoever they trade away, that the assets they get in return would allow them to really be on a much stronger footing for that rebuild.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And then it always brings up the question, could LA handle both of their teams not being good? Because I don't think they've had to deal with that in a very long time.
You know, I think LA could handle it because there's so many options for entertainment here. Yeah. Whether it's, you know, we have two NBA teams, two NFL teams now. Ostensibly, we have two hockey teams and two baseball teams. Plus, you got and we're soon to have two soccer teams, LAFC and the Galaxy. Plus, you factor in all the different concert venues that are busy from night to night, and all the movie theaters. That's the thing. In LA, if you're not winning, people aren't going to shell out their entertainment dollar to come see you because there's so many better ways to spend it. This is an entertainment town. Sports nowadays is entertainment. And if the teams are not entertaining, people aren't going to show up. So I think LA will go on. If people are really upset, they can just walk outside and look up in the sky and take in some sunshine and enjoy a little breeze. Life goes on here. We don't suffer from seasonal affective disorder in LA, except for like the 5 days a year when it actually rains.
Right. I was going to say, we here in Jacksonville do not get that perk. We only have the Jags and they aren't good. So everyone's just really pissed off all the time.
I wish I could help you guys there.
It's a burden we have to bear, I guess. Josh Martin, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Josh, where can they find you if somebody wants to hit you up after listening to this episode?
They can find me on Twitter at JoshMartinNBA. Same handle on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook at Josh Martin. And listen to me on Hollywood Hoops with Eric Pincus, which you can find on the Almighty Baller Network, same as you guys.
Yes, yes. Happy to be joining the Almighty Baller Network. Josh, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole!
Da 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 da. Hey! Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Hey!
Let's go while we're young.
All right. I think they get the point.